that we have had this day, we have emphasized the importance of friendship, but today we'd like to concern ourselves with the family. And we are asking two questions this morning, and that is, what is the origin of the family, and what was the original design? The home, the family, begins with marriage. And surprisingly, marriage on earth is even older than sin. There aren't many things that can make that claim. But marriage was instituted before sin entered into the world. In order to comprehend this, we have to study Genesis chapters 1 and 2. Now, in Genesis chapter 1, verses 1 through 31 is a summary of what occurred on each of the 6 days of creation. And then chapter 2 is an elaboration. Verses 1 through 3 describe briefly the seventh day, but the rest of chapter 2 elaborates on the sixth day before moving on. So we have a view of all 6 days of creation and a mention of the seventh day of rest. And then chapter 2 focuses on what happened on the sixth day, not just a summary, but things that actually occurred on that particular day. And one of those things is what we just had read for us in Genesis 2, 18 through 24. We want to notice about the sixth day that, among other things, Adam named all of the animals in order to notice that none of them was sufficient to be comparable to him. None of them could be an equal companion to Adam. There was no suitable helper among the animals. So God then created Eve, as we just read, but let's consider some other observations in connection with this. First, the being created from Adam's rib is called woman because she was taken out of man. All other men will be born of woman. But in the first instance, she came from him. Is this just some sort of parable then? No. If it is, what's the comparison? No, it's not figurative language that we read. It is a descriptive language of what actually occurred in this time period. It is, in other words, literal. And in fact, Paul confirms that, if there was any doubt, in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 8 and 9, and then verses 11 and 12. In 1 Corinthians 11, 8 and 9, "For man is not from woman, but woman from man." Paul is referring to the creation here. "Nor was man created for the woman, but woman for the man." In verse 11, he adds, "Nevertheless, neither is man independent of woman, nor woman independent of man in the Lord. For as the woman was from the man, even so the man is also through the woman, but all things are from God." And so this references what we have read about and studied in Genesis chapter 2, and it confirms it. Now, the next thing we want to notice is that Adam was first and then Eve. We see this clearly the case in Genesis chapter 2, and Paul also cites it as a reason for men having the leadership role over women in the church. And we find that in 1 Timothy 2, verses 12 and 13. Let's notice very quickly the confirmation there of the same principle. "And I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over a man, but to be in silence. For Adam was formed first, then Eve. And so again, this is not just some figurative language that is used in Genesis. It is an actual description of what occurred. Now, third, the word wife is used in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 24, which implies that God married the first man and the first woman. How else would she become his wife? Thus, marriage is older than sin, which is not introduced on earth until Genesis chapter 3. Now remember that all that is mentioned in Genesis chapter 2 is an elaboration of the sixth day. That sixth day was already described as a summary in chapter 1, but this is the elaboration of that sixth day. After Eve is created and God marries them, which they seem to have understood, the sixth day comes to a close as per what we read in Genesis chapter 1 and verse 31. And God's commentary upon that is in Genesis 1:31 that everything that he had created was very good. And that includes man and woman and their being married together. He has, in 6 days, created the heavens and the earth, the sun, the moon, and the stars, all the vegetation that you see upon the earth, the animals, and man and woman, and instituted marriage. And you thought you got a lot done last week. But God was able to complete all of this in 6 days and rested on the seventh. Now, all of these things God accomplished before the entrance of sin into the world. Thus, marriage, as we've said, is older than even sin, which makes it a divine institution, one of purity when adhered to the way God designed it. And that's what we want to talk about next. Is the way God designed marriage. We didn't make any applications as we were going through the description, but we want to do that now. Eve was created out of Adam, as was mentioned, and God brought them together. This was not a haphazard arrangement. God designed it precisely the way he wanted it. And we're going to show how as we go along this morning. So we know what did occur, and now we want to show that as God did this, he established a pattern the way he precisely wanted it done, and that is what we still need to adhere to today, and we're going to offer some proof of that. Before we close this morning. So first of all, since God married Adam and Eve, it was not his will that they live in fornication. That is, without being married. It is estimated today that about 70% of couples are living together as husband and wife sexually, without being married, which is what fornication is. Now, fornication is not a word you hear bandied about very much, but it's a word that is in the scriptures, and that's what it means. In Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 4, fornicators, and that would be those living together apart from marriage, and adulterers, God will judge. This sin is just about in every list that you will find in the New Testament. You'll find it in 1 Corinthians 6, 9 through 11, Galatians 5, 19 through 21. And as you go reading through various passages in the New Testament, it's doubtful that you will find it omitted hardly ever, because it is such a common transgression. But it is a transgression of the design that God had for man and for woman. God's design in marriage is one of one woman and one man, and intimacy is designed only for two people in that relationship. So that was God's design, as you have seen in Genesis 2, verses 18 through 24. But mankind began to change God's original design. God created one and only one of each gender for marriage. God did not take one of Adam's ribs and make a man for Adam as well as a woman. That was not his design. Nor did he take two ribs and bring Adam two women and say, here's your wives. That's not the way that God did it. That's why we mentioned that this arrangement is not haphazard. God designed it precisely the way that he wanted. And so these various combinations were not in the mind of God. He created the man and the woman precisely the way he did as a pattern. However, man soon began to change that pattern. Sin enters the world, and things change when that occurs. In fact, it's Genesis 3, and we don't know how much time has elapsed since the first week was completed, but it does occur sometime after that first week. After the first week, everything was very good. So sin entered in a little later on. And we find the recording of that in Genesis chapter 3. In Genesis chapter 4, we find that marriage has already been perverted. And we find that in chapter 4 in verse 19. We have a man named Lamech who took for himself two wives. The name of one was Ada, and the name of the second was Zillah. And that's repeated in the first part of verse 23. Then Lamech said to his wives, Ada and Zillah, hear my voice. Lamech did that which God had not authorized. And he was from the ungodly seed line. The godly seed line develops through Seth, that we read about in chapter 5. But these were descendants of Cain. And so the idea of polygamy was not invented by God. It was invented by man from the ungodly seed line. Now, through Noah and his family, monogamy seems to have been restored. There were only eight on the ark. Each one was a marriage of a man and a woman. However, after the flood, polygamy soon redeveloped in the world, and even the godly began to practice it. In fact, in addition to Sarah, Abraham took Hagar long enough as a wife to bear Ishmael, and Jacob ended up with four wives. And God allowed it, but he never encouraged it, nor was it his original design. He allowed it for a period of time. Now, hold that thought, that God tolerated polygamy, though he did not endorse it, even though it was not his design, while we travel down another road. Nothing indicates in the Old Testament or the New Testament that two men or two women ever tried to insist upon marriage. Homosexuality basically falls into the category of fornication according to Thayer's definition of the word porneia. We get the word pornography from that, if that gives you a hint about what the word involves. But not only are unmarried couples guilty of porneia, homosexuality also comes under that very broad descriptive word, according to the Greek expert Thayer. And this proved to be a widespread problem in the time of Abraham. Sodom and Gomorrah, Admah and Zeboim, that usually get overlooked, were cities of the plain, and they were all perverted cities. Within just 300 or 400 years of the flood, we find God determining to destroy those cities. Let's notice Genesis chapter 18 and verse 20. And the Lord said, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry against it that has come to me. And if not, I will know. Well, of course, that's speaking of God anthropomorphically. He knew that what the case was. But he went and, in a sense, investigated, found out it was the same, and then had a debate with Abraham as to how to spare those cities if so many righteous could be found. Abraham started out with 50 and ended up with 10, and God said, yeah, if there's 10 righteous, I won't destroy the cities. You'll notice they were destroyed. So in chapter 19, verses 4 and 5, we read that two angels had come to the city, and before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both old and young, all the people from every quarter surrounded the house, and they called to Lot and said to him, where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out that we may know them carnally. Thus, the city was found to be as perverted as reported. And God destroyed four of those five cities of the plain. Now, here's a point in why we ask you to hold that other thought. Unlike polygamy, God never tolerated this sin. He did not approve of polygamy. He did not endorse it, but he allowed it to occur. That never happened here. Homosexuality was even forceful at times, but even if the men of Sodom had married each other, it still would have violated God's design. And so this is something that was considered a grievous sin the very first time we're introduced to it, and God destroyed the cities of the plain because of it. It was sin under the law of Moses later on, and it is still regarded as sin in the New Testament, Romans chapter 1, verses 21 through 32. Now, there is another thing that violates God's original plan, and that is divorce. Did God give any instructions to Adam and Eve about divorcing each other and marrying someone else? No. In fact, for a long time, there wasn't anybody else. Not until they had children, and then their children had children. You can envision Adam saying, I'm interested in a younger woman, and Eve saying, you're leaving me for who? She's young enough to be your granddaughter. In fact, she is your granddaughter. Where else would she come from? But God designed marriage to be for life. He did not tell Adam and Eve, you may not be able to stay together for 900 years, so you can divorce if you wish. Although, Adam, it'll cost you another rib if you do. No, that was not the way God planned it. It was not the way God set it up. Now, we have seen the original plan, and we have seen what was not God's original plan. And we mentioned that there would be some confirmation of this, and so we want to get to that at this time. How do we know that God's original design is still valid, is still the one he wants? Because some of Jesus's enemies asked him a question about marriage, hoping to trap him. You know, you have to realize that a lot of the questions Jesus asked were not to get knowledge. They were to try to trap him into making the people angry and deserting him as a teacher. But they failed. But in the process, we find out God has not abandoned his original design. Let's look at Matthew chapter 19, verses 3 through 6. The Pharisees also came, testing him and saying to him, "Is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for just any reason?" Now, they asked that because there was a Jewish rabbi who taught that. There were actually two schools of thought, one that you did or could, and one that you didn't or couldn't. So they were hoping to ask this question so that Jesus would alienate at least some of the people. If he went with one, then he would alienate the others and vice versa. So that's the purpose for asking the question. However, Jesus always speaks the truth, and so he answers this. Have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female? There again, Jesus is saying that is God's design. And for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, singular, and the two shall become one flesh. Not the three, not the five, but the two shall become one flesh. So then, they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what God has joined together, let not man put asunder. God has joined the man and the woman together, and they should not tear it up. They should not wreck it. They should not have all these complaints that some people come up with. Well, she does this and he does that, and pretty soon they're arguing and trying their best to terminate the marriage. No, that's not how it works. When you enter into it, you understand this is it. This is my mate for life. Now, although the question concerned divorce, it substantiates the fact that God designed one woman for one man for life. Jesus never approved of fornication or any other combination that we talked about this morning, but rather God's institution of marriage. It's still not polygamy, homosexuality, fornication, or divorce. Or divorce, unless Jesus gave one exception in verse 9. And in verse 9, he says this, "And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife," I'm going to leave out the except clause, we'll come back to that in a minute, "whoever divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery. And whoever marries her who is divorced commits adultery." Now that's the main principle. There is one exception. Let's read it again. "And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for sexual immorality and marries another commits adultery." Jesus gave this one exception. A mate who refuses to be faithful may rightly be divorced, freeing the other from the situation. So the scriptures have taught from the beginning. You can't get any more beginning than Genesis chapters 1 and 2. It have taught from the beginning what God's design is. It is common today to have a group of associates refer to themselves as family. We just want to add this part on. We have discussed it the way God designed it. We have seen Jesus confirm it. But a lot of times today you hear people saying family in a way other than biological. That a group of associates, we are family. Sister Sledge had a song back in the 70s called We Are Family. In fact, the Pittsburgh Pirates used that as their theme song back then, as a tightly close-knit group. Many on television, likewise, in certain situations, call themselves family. But here's the fact. Jesus was the first one to do that. Let's take a quick look at Matthew chapter 12, verses 45 through 50. Matthew chapter 12, verses 45 through 50. You almost think that this is a modern invention to do this. But in verse 46, while he was still talking to the multitudes, behold, his mother and brothers, that's biological family, stood outside seeking to speak with him. And then one said to him, look, your mother and your brothers are standing outside seeking to speak with you. But he said, answered and said to them, who is my mother and who are my brothers? Well, we all know the answer to that biologically. But he stretched out his hand toward the disciples and said, here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of the Father in heaven is my mother and sister and brother. Jesus was first to have a broader definition of family than biological. The question is, are you part of that family? Are you the one who is doing the will of the Father in heaven? Well, you must begin by becoming God's child. And that involves obeying the gospel. That involves having forgiveness of sins, as mentioned in Acts chapter 2 and verse 38. Have you done what Paul describes in Romans 6, 3 through 5, died to sin, been buried in baptism, and then arisen to walk in newness of life? Jesus died on the cross, he was buried, and he was resurrected from the dead. You have to die to sin. That's repentance. And then you have to be buried, not in a tomb, but in a watery grave, and then raised up to walk in newness of life. This is the way one enters the family of God. This is not my definition. This is not anybody here's definition. This is what we read in the scriptures. And so if you have never obeyed the gospel and you want to know more, please tell us how we can help you this morning. We're going to stand and sing a song of invitation. And if you need to know more, if you would like to know more, we stand ready to assist you. If you already know or you have wandered astray and want to come back to the family of God, we invite you to come too while we stand and while we sing.